to blow the computer.
ELL. Freedom Radio.
Greetings. Welcome to episode 1 of Commander X Speaks.
Hello, I'm Severn Suzuki speaking for ECHO, the environmental children's organization. We're a group of 12 and 13-year-olds trying to make a difference. Vanessa Setti, Morgan Geisler, Michelle Quigg, and me. We've raised all the money to come here ourselves, to come 5,000 miles to tell you adults you must change your ways. Coming up here today, I have no hidden agenda. I am fighting for my future. Losing my future is not like losing an election or a few points on the stock market. I am here to speak for all generations to come. I am here to speak on behalf of the starving children around the world whose cries go unheard. I am here to speak for the countless animals dying across this planet because they have nowhere left to go. I am afraid to go out in the sun now because of the holes in our ozone. I am afraid to breathe the air because I don't know what chemicals are in it. I used to go fishing in Vancouver, my home, with my dad, until just a few years ago, we found the fish full of cancers. And now we hear of animals and plants going extinct, every day vanishing forever. In my life, I have dreamt of seeing the great herds of wild animals, jungles and rainforests full of birds and butterflies. But now I wonder if they will even exist for my children to see. Did you have to worry of these things when you were my age? All this is happening before our eyes, and yet we act as if we have all the time we want and all the solutions. I'm only a child, and I don't have all the solutions. But I want you to realize, neither do you. You don't know how to fix the holes in our ozone layer. You don't know how to bring the salmon back up a dead stream. You don't know how to bring back an animal now extinct. And you can't bring back the forest that once grew where there is now a desert. If you don't know how to fix it, please stop breaking it. Here, you may be delegates of your government, business people, organizers, reporters, or politicians. But really, your mothers and fathers, sisters and brothers, aunts and uncles, and all of you are someone's child. I'm only a child, yet I know we are all part of a family, 5 billion strong. In fact, 30 million species strong. And borders and governments will never change that. I'm only a child, yet I know we are all in this together and should act as one single world towards one single goal. In my anger, I am not blind, and in my fear, I am not afraid of telling the world how I feel. In my country, we make so much waste. We buy and throw away, and yet northern countries will not share with the needy. Even when we have more than enough, we are afraid to share. We are afraid let go of some of our wealth. In Canada, we live the privileged life, with plenty of food, water, and shelter. We have watches, bicycles, computers, and television sets. The list could go on for 2 days. 2 days ago, here in Brazil, we were shocked when we spent time with some children living on the streets. This is what one child told us. I wish I was rich. And if I were, I would give all the street children food, clothes, medicines, shelter, and love and affection. If a child on the streets who has nothing is willing to share, why are we who have everything still so greedy? I can't stop thinking that these are children my own age, that it makes a tremendous difference where you are born. that I could be one of those children living in the favelas in Rio. I could be a child starving in Somalia, or a victim of war in the Middle East, or a beggar in India. I am only a child, yet I know if all the money spent on war was spent on finding environmental answers, ending poverty, and finding trees, what a wonderful place this earth would be. At school, even in kindergarten, you teach us how to behave in the world. You teach us not to fight with others, to work things out, to respect others, to clean up our mess, not to hurt other creatures, to share, not be greedy. Then why do you go out and do the things you tell us not to do? Do not forget why you are attending these conferences, who you're doing this for. We are your own children. You are deciding what kind of world we are growing up in. Parents should be able to comfort their children by saying, everything's going to be all right. It's not the end of the world. And we're doing the best we can. But I don't think you can say that to us anymore. Are we even on your list of priorities? My dad always says, you are what you do, not what you say. Well, what you do makes me cry at night. You grown-ups say you love us. But I challenge you, please, make your actions reflect your words. Thank you.
Good evening, everyone. This is Commander X. Thank you for tuning in to the inaugural episode of Commander X Speaks. This is the first time in a while that I've produced a radio show, and I'm working with some very minimal equipment here, so hopefully we won't have any technical problems. But if there is a glitch, I hope that you'll be patient with me as I try to figure it out. I have some fantastic music, some interesting audio queued up, and we will have a very special guest, Lorax, from Anon Plus Radio, will join me for a chat in just a little bit. As most of you know, I have appeared as a guest a number of times on his own radio show, Lorax Live, so it's going to be interesting to sort of turn the tables on him and see if we can peel back some of the layers of mystery surrounding Lorax. I'm going to start off tonight with some news in the world of cyber activism this week. In the Roles of the Week department, earlier today it was announced that B had once again screwed around with Time's Person of the Year vote, and they managed to get the dictator of North Korea, Kim Jong-il, elected to the top spot. So, B is at it, as always. How interesting. I wonder if it'll be interesting to see whether or not they actually adhere to the final vote. As we know, earlier this year, some of you might know, Anonymous won the top slot as the most influential person of the year in Time's poll. And they did put us on the list. I think we were like number 14 or 15. They didn't give us the top spot that the vote actually reflected, but they were at least honest enough to put us on the list. So we'll see whether or not the dictator of North Korea becomes People's Person of the Year. I guess we'll have to wait till January when the issue comes out. Anonymous India has been busy this week defending the internet from censorship in that country. On Friday, Anonymous India hacked into the official website of Information Technology Minister Kapil Sibal and defaced it with unflattering comments about his mental abilities. The ostensible provocation was Sybil's championing of laws that his critics interpret as a license to police and muzzle social media. The law, called number 66A, reads, and I quote, "Any person who spends any means of computer resource, any information that is grossly offensive or has a menacing character, or any information which he knows to be false, for the purpose of causing annoyance, inconvenience, danger, obstruction, or insult, shall be punishable with imprisonment for a term which may extend to 3 years, and with a fine of $250. Wow. Two girls in Mumbai were arrested last week on this law after one of them wrote on Facebook comments critical of the local government. Her friend was also arrested simply because she liked the status message on Facebook. Before that, a few weeks ago, police came knocking on the door of a small businessman at the crack of dawn and took him away. His offense? He had tweeted about the son of Finance Minister B. Chidambaram. A few months ago, a professor from Kolkata was arrested for forwarding caricatures of West Bengal Chief Minister Mamata Banerjee using Facebook. In all the cases, the law enforcers used the innocuous provision of the IT Act, Section 66A, which allows for the imprisonment of any person who sends, by any means of a computer resource, any information which is grossly offensive or has a menacing character. Offensive to whom? In addition to defacing the Minister of Telecommunications website, Anonymous India has organized various in-real-life protests in cities around the country. Way to go, Anonymous India. Good job, good job. And of course, the biggest news in the Anon world this week was the internet shutdown of the entire country of Syria. At 12:30 p.m. local time in Damascus, all internet PBX lines and mobile service in Syria was shut down. Not since Operation Egypt has Anonymous witnessed such a massive and comprehensive national internet shutdown. Anonymous sprang into action immediately, and within 3 hours, we had set up an IRC channel, published a press release, and set up a special website, which you can visit at www.operationsyria.tk. At some point early today, after a 2.5-day shutdown, the Assad regime turned all the telecommunications back on, and Anonymous quickly issued an updated statement. Let's take a listen to that statement.
Greetings, world. We are Anonymous. In the last days, it has come to our attention that all internet traffic into and out of Syria was taken down. Within a half hour of this sudden shutdown, the PBX landlines were degraded by 90% and mobile connectivity was degraded by 75%. The nation of Syria has gone dark, and Anonymous knows all too well what happens in the dark places. Anonymous has done an exhaustive analysis of the internet shutdown in Syria, and we have concluded that the Syrian regime has physically severed the fiber optic and coaxial cables coming into Syria. Essentially, they have physically pulled the plug out of the wall, as we discovered in Egypt, where the dictator Mubarak did something similar. This is not damage that can be easily or quickly repaired. Fortunately, Anonymous has been working with Syrian activists for well over a year in anticipation of this moment. We produced and disseminated the Syrian care package, and there are emergency independent media centers already set up in every city of Syria. Activists and independent journalists in Syria will be able to utilize these media centers to get news and media out of Syria, and Anonymous will assist in propagating that media to the world. Anonymous will keep open the lines of telecommunication with the free Syrian people. We will be the voice of the voiceless in Syria. Anonymous will not allow this massive violation of the human rights of the free Syrian people go unpunished. We feel this is a desperate move by a dying regime, one that has slaughtered tens of thousands of innocent civilians. By turning off the internet in Syria, the butcher Assad has shown that the time has come for Anonymous to remove the last vestiges of his evil government from the internet. Even if the Syrian government opened the gates to the internet and other telecommunication systems today, this will not stop our operation. Soon, his people will remove him from this world. Let the final battle for a free Syria begin. We are Anonymous. We are Legion. We do not forgive. We do not forget. Bashar Assad, your turn has come. Expect us.
So that was the message that was released this morning after the internet was turned back on in Syria. And I have to say, it certainly expresses my personal feelings as an Anon. Operation Syria has, not only will it continue, it's really never ended. Some of you may know that I am part of a organization known as the People's Liberation Front, and we actually joined Op Syria on, I think it was April 23rd of 2011, so we're coming up now on 2 years of involvement in Op Syria. And like many ops that become quagmires like this, where it drags on for a long time, there are periods of time when it seems like there's not a lot of activity going on. But there actually is. Behind the scenes, there's a lot that goes on. We work with these activists on the ground, and as the video mentioned, we help them to set up media centers and help them to prepare in advance for any sort of internet shutoff. And actually, while the nationwide shutoff is fairly unprecedented, if you talk to any of the activists on the ground, you find out that Assad does this on pretty much a weekly basis, but usually it's a town by town, city by city kind of shutdown. And the Syrians have learned that when the internet goes off, they head for the bomb shelters, because it usually means there's going to be a pretty horrible attack by the regime forces. So Op Syria continues. If you'd like to join us and help us plan the next phase, we've come up with some very interesting ideas today on how we want to move forward. Join at the IRC. The URL is chat.anonset.com. The port for your client is 6697. And the channel, of course, is Op Syria. You can also just go to the main website for the op, which is, again, www.operationsyria.tk. Click on the IRC link for a web chat. We're going to listen to a little bit of music now. I've been told that this is a song that is much loved in the land down under. All right, so that was Southern Land, Great Southern Land by Ice House. And that was at the special request of our guest tonight. And my guest tonight really needs no introduction. As the host of his own tremendously successful radio show, Lorax Live, he has interviewed some of the most famous and infamous people in the world of cyber activism. His wit, intelligence, and insider's grasp of Anonymous has made him the single most listened to radio personality in Anonymous. His main show airs weekly on Friday night, and you can find out more at www.anonplus.com/radio.html. And so it is my humble and very great honor to welcome, as my very first guest ever, Lorax. Lorax, can you hear me?
I can hear you fine. How you doing? Can you hear me?
I can, but I'm not sure our audience can, so I'm going to work on that. That's one of those technical difficulties we talk so much about. Try it again.
All right, how's that?
There we go. They're hearing you, I think. Let's check in the chat room and see. Can you guys hear Lorax? Somebody give me a shout in the chat if you can hear Lorax.
It's Tuesday, the UPI, 16th of October, 1989, Atlantis, go.
They say they can hear you, but the audio is very low. So we'll...
Testing, 1, 2, how's that? Is that better? 1, 2.
I'm looking for it. He said it's a bit low, but they can hear you. Well, we're going to go ahead. We're going to give it a try anyway and see what we got. I wanted to start out tonight with Anonplus in general. A lot of people, I don't think, in Anonymous even know what Anonplus is. Can you give us some details about what Anonplus is and what the sort of philosophy behind the website, how it began, that sort of thing?
It started back, well, what was it, around August 2011. Originally, it was a bit of a clusterfuck, to say the least. It was a group of developers, anyway, that joined together on the call. Actually, Jan put out the call originally after getting banned on Google Plus, that they wanted to start a free social media site. And a group of developers met within Anonymous at that time, and as the idea of the social network sort of dissipated, the group of developers stayed around and stayed together just as a cell, you might say, all having a common idea of free speech and developing tools for Anonymous. There's been other tools like Urge that have been developed by Anonplus devs, you know, just different sites, you know, some Tor sites, hosting libraries and things like that, and not to mention some other tools that have been used by different groups within Anonymous. The radio project was just something that, I suppose, we had a few servers spare, and we noticed, that Anon talks to itself via the media, and we thought it would be a good idea maybe for Anon to start controlling some of its own media sort of late last year, and by doing so, give itself a voice that couldn't be perverted by the mainstream media, you know, so...
Well, so, and now, is it, there's no chance that you're going to backtrack and try to refocus on some of those other things, like the social media aspect?
Oh, definitely. We're still working through. The original Anonplus social media platform can be found on Launchpad. It's an open source project. That project is still moving forward. There's still a team of developers working on that, but... you know, it's a pretty ambitious project for a small team to be working on. If it does get completed, it will revolutionise communications too. It's a fully encrypted system, which you know, using peer to peer, not unlike this radio system that you've put together, which I think is a great idea. We've got to be looking for new ways to communicate, new ways to, you know, work with each other that are safer, and keeping in mind the Anonymous decentralized, you know, form, I think it only makes us grow stronger. So if we can continue to work and develop these tools for ourselves and for everybody else, I think we give our you know we're giving something back to the internet, you know.
Talk to me about Anon Plus Radio. You guys have really sort of come out of nowhere. For a long time, we had Anon Ops Radio. It was very, very popular. What brought forward the idea of adding radio to Anon Plus?
Well, as you know, I go out on Anon Ops Radio as well. I think the viewpoint for Anon Plus Radio isn't so much the server itself, you know, the streaming server. It's more about developing the content provision. You know, it's as anybody who's worked with me knows that we're trying to foster as many different shows as possible, not just mine. Mine, we just used. I think we just tried to spearhead some content. You know, get a sort of a platform and a spearhead to drive it through. And as my show became popular, then other DJs have sort of got on board and wanted to start their shows. And I think it's good because we to fill content 24 hours a day is going to take a large number of us working. You know, I can't operate 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And it's something that we've experimented with Anon Plus Radio across a few different ideas, like Op Bart, the anniversary of Op Bart. We streamed live to Op Bart, the Op NATO in Chicago. We used radio quite well there with the medic Anon medics. And the support teams, where they, as you know, Twitter can become overpowered in large-scale operations like NATO or the Occupy Wall Street movements. So they were using the radio, and we were coordinating, you know, the movements of the Anon medics and the support teams with the radio and covering it at the same time. So it actually worked really well. And this is just some out there ideas that we want to experiment with. And but the original philosophy, again, go back, was more just for Anon to have its control of its own media, you know, a way for Anon to be able to talk to itself anonymously and gain back some of that credibility within its own media. One of the problems we noticed in the past, and you know this yourself, is the mainstream media tends to pervert our own message, you know, and in doing so, we can end up with a lot of confusion about operations and direction about within Anonymous, and it can cause division, and it was also a weak point because governments or even groups that wanted to subvert Anonymous in any way could use the media to split and divide and cause havoc within our own. You know, as you know, being a decentralized group like Anonymous, where it is one of our weaknesses. You know, so the philosophy behind the radio was to try and get hold of one type of media that we could, you know, as a group and as a collective, you know, control ourselves. And I think that's worked really well. I've kept a copy left approach, where I like to work with every group. So it doesn't matter, somebody could spring up a radio tomorrow, I want to work with them. You know, it's just that's the way it should be, and we should all be working together, you know, a bit of solidarity, and that way we can provide a good, because for people to listen to it, we've got to provide some professionalism, in a sense. It's got to be listenable, you know. We've got to be entertaining as well as informative, I think. So yeah, that was the overall philosophy of the Anon Plus Radio. Not so much the server side, more the content delivery side. Yeah,
well, I can't agree enough with the idea that you know, to all work together. I when I first fielded PLF Freedom Radio, you know, my first thought was, in fact, for a long time, we were just linked to Anon Plus Radio. I had the button on the website, and we just simply linked to you guys. And in fact, we still get a good deal of content. It's kind of funny, but leading up to the show, I had to. I'm working with very minimal equipment here tonight, and some of it's working so-so. And I'm actually, this is my first show, so I'm learning some things tonight that I'll have to go back and fix. The listeners are being very, very patient with a couple of technical problems we're having, but we talked about this last night in your show. The only reason really why I fielded PLF Freedom Radio to begin with, because really I think that Anon Plus Radio and Anon Ops Radio have really filled the void. They've done the job, is simply to get out the idea of this unique platform that we're on. But you know, we talked about that last night, so I don't want to get into it. Tell me about.
Yeah, well, Even talking about that too, I mean, we should be, as an Anonymous or Freedom Radio, it doesn't matter what we want to call it, as sort of independent radio gearing, you know, towards content for the Anonymous Collective. We should be, you know, why can't your show should be going out over a Nonplus and a Non-Ops and at the same time. So as we develop this new technology and as it gets taken up, you know, we can still deliver that content to as many people that want to as possible, you know. I think the idea that you're trying to push here with Freedom Radio is great. I think the actual concept of a decentralized radio network, I think it's brilliant. You know, whether it takes a year for it to be fully developed and to iron out the kinks. I mean, at the moment, I can't listen because it's only on Windows, but hopefully being an open source project, that'll only take a month or so to get on the open source platforms, operating systems, and then from there, you know, we can build on it, you know. Yeah. But in the meantime, I think Anon's working. I mean, this is something, you know, the guys that are Non-Ops will tell you too. I mean, originally I went to them and said, look, we're doing radio, you're doing radio. If we join together, we'll have a better radio, you know. Yep. And when we get DDoS attacks, I mean, we got DDoS today where you're on online, but because we've got a good strong team now, if one server goes down, people can go to the other server, you know. So it's sort of like a semi-decentralized platform there in its own right. Yeah,
you guys should learn that every time you have me on the air, you're going to get DDoSed. It's almost a given.
Well, it's you and Christine Assange. Whenever I have a talk about WikiLeaks or yourself, it's a DDoS. There seems to be a DDoS attack.
So isn't that funny? Well, you know, I guess I guess we could always adopt the telecomics philosophy. The more data, the better. Send us the data, love. We love it, you know?
That's it. Actually, for the first 6 months, we copped huge attacks at Anonplus. We even had one of the servers null rooted totally. But, you know, it's something that you adapt, you learn. It's part of the game. It's part of the net these days.
I think especially in cyber activism, where there's so many players with so many diametric agendas, you know, I think, you know, if you're going to be essentially, you know, a hacker organization or a hacker website or a hacker media, I think you got to expect that you're going to put a target on your back.
And what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. You know? I remember when the DDoS thing started, you know, way back in the mid-90s. I mean, before the mid-90s, bandwidth was so scarce that people wouldn't have thought of DDoSing, you know, because it was just, you know, I mean, people were still, it would take you 3 days just to get one page of text down. So, you know, the DDoS, the denial of service was frowned upon. It was sort of that mid-90s, I suppose, Windows 95, the old OOB attack, you know, port 3139, you know, where the user against user troll DDoS attacks really started to, you know, enter the online underground chat scenes, you know, that the lame user would enter the channel and not have a patched OOB port, and hence they'd get the blue screen, you know, and that was sort of the advent of that. And it's grown from there. Now there's all sorts of different sophisticated ways to take people offline.
Well, the times have changed so amazingly. I can remember working with the Cult of the Dead Cow and Chaos Computer Club to defend Napster. Yeah. During the defense of Napster, a battle which we, of course, lost. You know, they handed us our ass, and then in retribution, we gave them BitTorrent. But but I can remember back then, you know, so much has changed because the very idea of claiming a DDoS, the very idea of even pre-announcing a DDoS was anathema. I mean, you did the DDoS, and then you prayed to God that nobody knew you did it. And you just sort of waited for the media to maybe notice that the site was gone, and they would sort of, well, you know, attribute it, maybe some hackers did this, you know. But you never, I mean, the idea that you would release a press release with a letterhead and say, hey, tomorrow we're going to DDoS something and then go do it, I don't know. Back in the defense of Napster, it would have been pretty anathema. I mean, we were pretty scared to do these sorts of attacks and whatnot. A lot has changed. So, you are such an incredible radio host, and I mean, I've been on your show a number of times. I listen every week. You are just fantastic at it. Have you had prior experience in radio? Have you done any, without giving any personal details away, have you done any prior work in radio?
Yeah, I was, well, going back a long time ago, I was involved in student radio back in the 80s. I've also been involved with radio for a number of international organizations, you know, charity style groups. I won't give any more information there, but you know, I've been a member of Greenpeace since 1985, you know, groups like Amnesty International, I hadn't done any for a while, I must say, due to a professional career before this. But I decided to have a sabbatical and go semi full time. I mean, the show takes, I think most people don't realize, but to pull off a 6 day a week show and then try and give some resemblance of professionalism and as we try and do, it takes a good sort of 35 hours a week of work. I don't think most people really realize that. So
I put in 4 or 5 just for a 1 hour show tonight, and was nervous.
Exactly right.
Nervous as hell about what, you know, what I set up. Talk to me about your anonymousness. You've dropped some hints from time to time when I've been on your show and when I've listened, that you've been around in the hacker scene for quite some time. Without giving any parts away that might get you in any trouble or anything, how far back does that go? And talk to me about Lorax. Who is Lorax, and what have you done, and what is your philosophy, and what led you to do it, and when did you start doing it?
You know, Lorax is just the pseudonym for this radio show, really. A lot of people in Anonymous knew me through other pseudonyms as well, which is probably why I could just jump in successfully and use those already then connections. But I mean, I'm about your age, and I suppose I was around in the 80s, in the mid 80s. There was a group called HPAOS, which we were running around back on the old X25, you know, the old International Data Communications Network. Any people who have been around since then will remember a worm called the Wank Worm, which wasn't really a worm. It was a group of hackers that were playing around between 87 and 89 called HPAOS, and that's actually where Julian Assange goes back to as well, in that group. And there's still a few original members from HPAOS floating around, believe it or not. There's actually a couple of channels still around. It basically stands for Hackers Freakers Australia. And it sprung out of the old BBS networks, you know, before the internet.
Oh, I remember the bulletin boards well.
we basically had, you know, Australia being a very small population as well, and also very isolated in its own capital cities, really are still very isolated from each other. You know, back in the 80s, living in a capital city was like living in a country town, you know. And so the BBSs were really important for a lot of people to communicate, especially if you... Back in those days, as you would imagine, the tech scene, and you were a very small percentage, you know. So if you were, you know, doing a bit of coding back on the old, you know, sort of Commodore 64 or whatever machine you had back then, and old Apple II, you know, you were a very small, you know, if you were at school, you'd be only one of two, maybe, you know. So it was very important for those BBSs. So groups, small pockets of groups around a state could then communicate and organize, you know, catch-ups, you might say, every now and then, or meets. And this is sort of where HPAOS sprung from. There was a couple of known BBSs back in the day. I mean, guys like PI back in the day in Melbourne, which is the one Julian Assange used to hang out with, you know, and other ones on the West Coast like Rip Axes. You know, they were pretty knowledgeable guys. And also back then, being so remote, for guys to communicate outside of the country, and this is something that Europe didn't have a problem with, or even America. Your networks were so much further advanced than ours. We really had to have a knowledge of our national phone system, which is when freaking sort of sprung up, you know. So hence the term Hackers Freakers Australia. For us to get outside the country, we really had to own the, and be involved with the X25 system, which allowed us then to call out and get into places like America and into Germany and Europe and Asia, especially, was often our first bounce out. But in doing so, this in the underground back then, it was a very more close knit society, I suppose, because you didn't have, like these days, anybody can connect to an IRC chat. You know, they just go to a web chat, click a button, and this is why you have such a large amount of knowledgeless trolls floating around too. You know, whereas in those days, you sort of had to know your stuff just to get connected to one of the bulletin boards, yeah. So it was going back there. HPAOS was then became famous for as well the Wank Worm, which wasn't really a worm; it was actually a group of a coordinated group of hackers, which pretty much owned nearly all the American systems. And really, it was over the nuclear testing that America was doing back in the day. And New Zealand had stood up for against the Americans for nuclear testing and banned US ships. Australia, as it has done now, pandered to American sort of, you know, will, and allowed nuclear testing. And there was a lot of us back in the day that were sort of, well, green-orientated, I think, and not just green-orientated, but political activists, and hence decided something was done about it, in a sense. And it became marked, as probably still to this day, the biggest single attack on any institution and institutions at any one time. And it was also the first ever politically motivated hack to go get recorded too.
As I recall, my remembrance of it was that it came right at the time when they were launching a satellite into space, or it may even have been an interplanetary probe, but it was the first one ever to contain a nuclear reactor, an actual nuclear reactor on board, and it was you guys actually stopped the launch. I mean, not forever.
Yeah, it came around 1989, that one. It was a string of, it wasn't just one incident, but you are right. Yeah, we stopped the launch, and it was actually a string of incidents that led up to it, starting from around 1987 through to around 1989. And I think it was the Galileo flight to Jupiter. It was the Atlantis launch on October 18th, 1989. And it was a whole string of these events that just pissed us off, basically.
Well, I think it pissed everybody off. I mean, you guys were on your game, but it pissed everybody off. And I just want to make a comment about the American phone systems and freaking, because I started as a freaker myself. And our networks may have been very advanced, but the long distance still cost you 25 cents a minute. And I want some of the younger people who are listening to the show tonight to just try to imagine that, because we have, you know, VoIP today, which is essentially free, but at the most you might pay like a tenth of a penny per minute, or whatever, to be online. Imagine a world where the only way to call even more than three counties away from yourself, it would cost you, and all these lines were lines in the sand. Whatever consisted of long distance was just arbitrary. It was somebody drew a line in the sand and said, hey, if you call beyond this line, it's going to cost you a quarter a minute. And so, you know, our systems may be a bit more advanced. We were using the PBX boxes at the time. But phone freaking was absolutely essential, and our whole focus in the beginning was to try to generate ways to break into that system, and to
brave new world, wasn't it? You've been given this computer, and you know what set you aside, I suppose. Well, in fact, most people who were given a computer back in those days were a little bit different anyway, I think. And you know, like, I was always into tinkering. You know, I mean, even before I had my first PC, I was pulling crap apart and putting it back together and blowing myself up. And I think that's what hacking is too. Hacking's a state of mind. It's not. I get so annoyed these days when when people talk to me about hijacking their friend's Facebook status page and calling it hacking. You know, and I have this argument. I run Solaris here, at home. You know, and people were like, what fuck do you run that for? And I said, well, because I enjoy the tinkering. I enjoy the hard work to make things work, and I enjoy making things work on it. You know, it's not meant to work out of the box for me. You know, I like to see what something can do, and I think that's that mindset is what hacking really is all about. At the end of the day, you know, that's where the vulnerabilities come from. People probing and seeing what things can do.
I like the definition of hacking, that a hacker is somebody who modifies a system in such a way that the original inventor did not intend, which covers a pretty wide swath of anything. And you know, I think Brian Knappenberger got it pretty good in the We Are Legion movie, where they traced hacking all the way back to the Model Railroad Club, and there was always the lulls. I mean, I think Anonymous and the folks over at 4chan think that they somehow invented you know, the idea of hacking in the walls. But the fact of the matter is, the fact of the matter is, it was always about pranks. It was always about pranks and trying to do things that to get a laugh at other people's expense was really kind of always part of the culture. Maybe not quite as viciously as the internet hate machine, but it was always there. It was always a part of the culture.
Something we've lost too. That you're definitely right. The lulls was always definitely a big, half of it. I think the thing that is lost a little bit these days is that the exploration side. I think something that drove some of the real underground scene back in those days, in the early 90s and late 80s, was that whole, you had this whole shiny new world, and nobody knew how it ran. People were plugging, a bit like today still, but companies were plugging these things in. This was the start. This was before the internet. This was before a public internet existed. This was just some companies hooking up systems. And you're using a phone system then to send data, which it wasn't meant for. This is before the actual internet. So it was a way for people in, especially you find back then, there was a lot of people from remote areas got involved in this sort of thing, because as you pointed out, it was by force. They wanted to communicate, yet, had to find ways to do it that were affordable, and at 25 cents a minute you couldn't do that. So you would then look at freaking to get a long distance data call across state, and then all of a sudden you'd meet somebody that was doing the same thing, and then you'd meet more, and you had this whole brave new world that was being explored, and systems were being tested. And I think in its true form, that's sort of where it sprung from, the underground scene anyway.
I think the young people take for granted too the sort of automation of the whole thing that exists now. I can remember doing hand scanning. I can remember sitting in Harvard Square in Cambridge with a block of phone numbers and sitting there literally dialing phone numbers over and over and over again, waiting to hear the bing, bing, bing on the other end that let me know that it wasn't a phone, it was a computer, you sit there for hours, and a cop comes along, and hey, what are you doing? Kind of poking into your business because you look sort of stupid just sitting there, and I'm just making a call, things were so much more different back then, and yet we were willing to do it. We were willing to go through that because you might sit there for 10 hours just to find one modem out of a thousand phone numbers, and then you went home, and then you went home with that one number and plugged it into your computer and just try to see what was on the other end. And it really was, like you say, the sense of exploration was incredible. Listen,
that's what drove me, I think, that sense of exploration. And obviously the scene developed so much from there. I mean, going back to the first sort of leaking as well, back in the 1993 when police documents were leaked in Australia from HPAOS. I mean, that's where Julian Assange started that whole, idea of the WikiLeaks ideal. That caused a royal commission in Australia, and that's where it all sort of began with the whole look-see hacker thing, So, interesting times,
Yeah, it was. It's funny to see what it has become. Although I don't denigrate what it's become. I think what it's become is what it should be. But it's interesting to have the broad perspective of time. And so I thank you for sharing that with me, Lorax. I can't thank you enough for coming on the air, man. I really appreciate you being my first guest on the show. And
anytime.
I hope that I hope that we can have you back on again. Thanks a lot for your time, and and I look forward to. Thank you very much, and I look forward to being on your show soon.
Yeah, we'll talk soon.
Okay, bye bye.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, so that was Lorax. I know that we had a bit of problems with the audio. I was watching the dial on the recording device, and we did capture enough of it, and I can work through that on the soundboard later, so that when we put the show, I'll put the show in rotation on PLF Freedom Radio, it will sound, I think, a lot better. I'm going to work through that issue. We'll figure out why he sounded so low. I was watching the bars. I think some of it was going through. anyway. But we, I'll work on figuring out why his end was so low. I was playing desperately with the, I had all my soundboards open. It's a very primitive sound card that I'm working with, unfortunately, also. It's an old IBM ThinkPad that I have. And it's not terribly duplex, and it, I was playing with it and doing the best I can, but we got through it, and it was a fantastic interview. I really have to thank Lorax for as I said, being my first guinea pig. Anyway, at Lorax's request, we're going to do another song from Down Under. This one is Beds Are Burning by Midnight Oil.
Belongs to
All right, so this is Commander X, and this is the end of my first episode of Commander X Speaks. Thanks for tuning in, everybody that stuck with me through thick and thin. Shout out to Kane, Medic, Ravena, and a little white line, someone who decided not to give themselves a name. But thank you all for tuning in. If I have been restreamed by any of the other stations out there and you're listening on one of those, because that happens and sometimes they just don't tell you, thank you also for tuning in. The Warax interview was just exactly what I expected. The man is absolutely fantastic. He's a legend especially in Anonymous Radio. And also, as we heard from his history, he's been around in the cyber activism world for almost pretty much as long as good old X here. So it was good to talk with somebody who remembers what it's like to hand scan phone numbers all day. So thanks for tuning in, everybody. We're going to do it every week at the same time. What is it? Saturday night at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We're going to bring it on out with a little bit of rage against the machine.
They use force to make you do what the deciders have decided you must do. They use force to make you do what the deciders have decided you must do. They use force to make you do what the deciders have decided you must do.
Someone moves at work forces. I can see and work process.